Yeah, I'll call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 10:36 a.m. on Thursday, May 4th, 2023. Present today, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Cannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Co-Chair Representative Edgman, Representative Kronk, Representative Ortiz, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, if folks can mute their cell phones. And this morning we'll hear two bills. We'll just be introducing them today, and that is Senate Bill 98, which is the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation and PCE Endowment Fund Bill, sponsored by the Senate Finance Committee. And then we'll also be hearing House Bill 19, and that is relating to the registration of commercial vessels, sponsored by Representative Stutes. Let's see. First up, we'll hear Senate Bill 98, Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, PCE Endowment. So I'd like to ask Tim Grusendorf, Senate Finance Committee staff, to please come to the table, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Tim Grusendorf. I am staff to the Senate Finance Committee. In front of you today is Senate Bill 98, Power Cost Equalization Fund Management. This bill does not change the PCE program itself. It is just changing the folks responsible for managing the fund. Senate Bill 98 is a Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund. Has about $1 billion currently managed by the Department of Revenue. SB 98 would transfer the management of the Permanent Fund Corporation from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation will manage the money alongside their own assets. The fund would be exactly as diversified as the Permanent Fund Fund is now, and the permanent fund currently does this for the Mental Health Trust Fund, which you are all aware of, and the fund will still be housed in AEA, but it will be managed by the Permanent Fund Corporation. And regular reporting to the legislature and AEA, Alaska Energy Authority, regarding asset value and income is also in this bill. This bill came before you after an overview by the Department of Revenue and by the Permanent Fund Corporation in front of the Senate Finance Committee. There was a concern among committee members about how this fund was being managed and the limitation of investments available to the current management. So the question was, why change the bill, or why change the management of it? First is more diversity. The Department of Revenue managers can only invest in stocks and bonds, and not the various alternative investments used by the permanent fund. The permanent fund offers a little more stability. The PCE fund has changed its earning goals and investment allocations at least three times in the last 4 years. During the presentation to the committee, it was revealed that the fund lost close to $200 million in FY22, which is lost 16% of its total asset. The managers in FY22, it was reported to us, the managers moved much of the fund out of equities into in early FY21, expecting there would be a reverse sweep. They heard rumors that was a possibility, that the fund was sweepable. As it turns out, it was not. But in doing so, they moved money around and they missed the big market gains. And then when they put the money back in, the market was already on its way down, so it was a big loss. PCE fund made 14% in FY21, while the permanent fund made 29% on their assets. So that is why the bill is in front of you. So how would it change the PCE program? It actually wouldn't. The same 5% of the fund value would be available each year to fund the programs described in statute. The same waterfall of priorities would be funded, the PCE program itself first, cost of managing the fund second, and if the previous year's earnings are more than what is needed for the top two above, or the program itself and managing the fund, 70% of the remaining earnings may be used for community assistance up to $30 million and their renewable energy grant fund, bulk fuel revolving loan fund, or rural power system upgrades up to $25 million. And that is what the bill does, Mr. Chairman. I can walk through the sectional if you'd like or answer any questions.
Let's look at the sectional here. I'm guessing it's pretty short. You know, maybe go ahead and go through it, just cover our bases.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 1, AS 3713310, gives the Permanent Fund Corporation management of the PC Endowment Fund and managing the fund with the same investment objectives and asset allocation as they currently have in place. Section B, or Part B of Section 1, adds the power cost equalization endowment and its current reporting requirements to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation statute. Section 2, AS 4245080A, makes the change in the PCE statute that the corporation will manage the fund under AS 3713310 by creating a new section in Article 2, Management of Other Assets of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, to include the PCE endowment. Section 3, AS 4245080C, reporting timing makes it clear that there is a lag when determining the value of the fund and the earnings of the fund by using the June 30th versus July 1st date. Section 4 is conforming language, changing Commissioner of Revenue with corporation. Section 5, AS 4245099, definition, adds corporation definition in the PCE statute. Section 6 was repealed because it was no longer necessary. It was redundant. Section 7 adds transition language when the funds are being moved. And Section 8 is the effective date.
Great. Thank you. Also, I'd like to note for questions, we have available Devin Mitchell, Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, Tim Sandstrom, Chief Operating Officer, Alaska Energy Authority, and Pauline Swanson, Communications Director for the Permanent Fund Corporation. Do you have a quick question? I think I know the answer, but I just want to make sure. If in the future we wanted to add what's called the waterfall, so on page 4 you've got excess earnings can go to Permanent Fund and Renewable Energy Fund. If we were interested in wanting to add to that waterfall, for example, excess earnings could go toward helping for maintenance of Village Safe Water for communities where they're having a difficult time with their scoring system. I'm assuming that if we wanted to add another category, that this wouldn't prohibit that, I'm assuming.
Mr. Chairman, no, it wouldn't prohibit that. And the waterfall falls outside of this bill. It changes nothing about the waterfall itself.
Great. Thank you. Do we have questions, Representative Hannon and then Ortiz?
Thank you, Chair Foster. Mr. Krusendorf, has it ever been contemplated in the past to move the PC endowment inside the Permanent Fund Corporation for Management, or do you know?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, I know the Senate and the senator that I work for, we discussed it and thought about it for a long time, but it wasn't until the fund lost $200 million, and because of the way it was being managed, that we thought it was time for a change.
Okay. Follow up.
So, I have a little concern on page 2. PCA would be exactly as diversified as the permanent fund. And my concern is PCA was structured for safe investment. Permanent Fund Corporation was initially too, restricted to stocks and bonds, very conservative investments, sort of to protect that asset. But through the years, we've liberalized the diversity of investment for the Permanent Fund Corporation, which puts us both at the opportunity for bigger gains, but also the opportunity for bigger losses. So and in particular, I'm thinking of that over the last few years, the Permanent Fund Corporation has invested in, I'm trying to think what the phrase was, but Alaskan entrepreneurial endeavors, you know, and that philosophy investment decision being made by their board, potential to take some risk with a category. So I want to know whether those investment decisions will be made entirely with the board and whether we have any sideboards to make sure that the PC endowment isn't at risk of the full, you know, a full investment in portfolio, again, really diverse, making some opportunities for greater losses than we've had in PCE. Has that been contemplated?
To the chair, Representative Hannon, in my discussions with the senators, they are comfortable with the permanent fund managed their style and the way they have, and so are many of the people of the state of Alaska. Permanent fund's been consistent, and their track record speaks for themselves. And I think it takes some of the politics out of it, being a step away in their own corporation. Yes, they've had some things happen with their board, I guess, in the past, but I don't believe that is a problem for the PCE fund. It's established enough and has enough balance in its funds to be able to withstand, you know, a down year or two. It's the way it's designed. It is designed to be able to backfill on the good years, on years that it does not.
Okay, so one more. Mm-hmm. So when, thank you, Chair Foster, when the portfolio of assets would then be taken in, and you've articulated that it's a fairly conservative asset combination of stocks and bonds. So upon going in, is it going to be rebalanced to reflect what the permanent fund portfolio is, and we're going to sell some stocks and buy some real estate and have it managed, or how is that levelizing with the rest of the corporate income's diversity portfolio going to take place over a period of time, or is it going to be rebalanced immediately to redistribute it out of stocks and bonds into the rest of the asset allocation that permanent fund corporations' assets are?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I believe they're going to manage it just like they manage the current funds they have, but probably a better question for them on how quickly they're going to make those changes when the fund gets transferred over.
Thank you.
Okay. In the queue, I've got Representative Ortiz, Edgman, and Josephson. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, through the chair. You said at the outset that the PCE will, quote, remain in AEA, and I assume that it was a part of AEA when it was managed by the Department of Revenue as well. But in what sense does it remain? What kind of authority? What kind of authority sits with AEA in relationship to the PCE?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the AEA will not change. They will still manage the PCE program.
Okay.
The 5% will go to them.
Okay.
They will distribute the money as needed, and the rest of it goes back into the fund. They're not going to be doing anything differently. The permanent fund will report to them on how the investments went and how much the balance is and what the 5% is, and that's what the permanent fund will do, and then the AEA will do the rest of is managing their part of it. That won't change.
So in the end, is there any change in management costs, any change in anything in relationship to if we make this change, if this bill goes forward, does it cost anything more or anything different for the state in terms of the resources?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, currently the fiscal note says, yes, there will be a bigger expense, and it's not due to the permanent fund taking over. It's the Department of Revenue, because I believe they use some of these funds to hire, you know, for some of their folks in the Department of Revenue. They don't want to lose these folks, so they want to, even though they won't be managing the fund, they will want some state general funds to backfill their losses there.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Representative, next up I've got Joe Orejman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I support this bill. I think it's a smart move to put the PCE endowment, which has been around for 20-some-odd years now, into a place where vis-a-vis the legislation we passed last year, Senate Bill 243, which kind of moved it from the traditional endowment management scheme, low risk, low return, into the realm of the prudent investor rule, which is what guides the permanent fund corporation and its asset allocation approach. And, you know, when I sit here and think about the PC endowment, it's a huge part of the energy portfolio for rural Alaska. It needs to remain a significant part of our energy picture going into the future. And I just want to underscore that it makes so much sense to me to put it into the hands of the permanent, the managers of the Permanent Fund Corporation, who last year in a down year, you know, in comparison to other sort of mammoth sovereign wealth funds, the California Trust Fund and a bunch of other things, the Permanent Fund Corporation lost 1.32% value, which was a tremendous sort of showing in a year where things didn't go very well across the board. So I'm totally supportive of this. I think it's a good move. I want to thank Senator Hoffman for bringing it forward, the Senate Finance Committee, and for you know, making sure that we take this endowment and manage it in a way that if there is another year like 2021 where the Permanent Fund Corporation had a return of 29-30%, that so does the PC endowment going forward, because there are going to be down years as well. So, Mr. Co-Chairman, I'm all for this bill. I think it makes a lot of sense, and really appreciate it being brought before the committee.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, and then Scott.
Through the chair, my question, just to give you a little context, and you'll remember this, but in 2019, the governor's, when he was first elected, his position was that these sort of capitalized funds were bad, and he thought everything should fight with everything else anew every year. He was very public about it. And there's always been this concern that someone in tough times would try to reappropriate these monies. Does this bill do anything to make that more difficult?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, no, because it's still housed in AEA. The managers, they just manage the fund. I mean, it's still available for appropriation. But it has been determined that AEA is a separate entity outside of the state, so the PCE fund, at least the last time we were told, it's a non-sweepable fund.
Follow?
And I'm aware of that ruling, and that in effect, the Superior Court ruling. And that's an important win for PCE, but there's this risk of reappropriation will be, supporters of it like myself will have to be vigilant forevermore.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, correct.
Thank you.
Okay, and I apologize, Representative Colomb. I see you've been online since the start of the meeting, and we do have a question from Representative Stapp, but I just want to check in with you and see. Did you have any questions, Representative Colomb?
Thank you, Chair. No, I think my question has already been answered, and I support the bill.
Great. Thank you. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Benjamin, Foster. Through the chair, I do want to echo the comments that Co-Chair Edgman made earlier. I certainly hope that the asset classes are reflective of the overall permanent fund investment asset allocation. When we hopefully make this move, I support this idea, mainly because the historic rate of return of the PCE is far below what the permanent fund has returned, despite the funds being structured effectively very similar with the same type of draw endowment. I do have a question on the fiscal note you mentioned earlier. Throughout this move, I know you mentioned Department of Revenue, but my summation would be we are going to have to pay the management fees through the Permanent Fund Corporation. I see here in the fiscal note that they're anticipating what's called 25 basis points or $2.5 million in basically asset manager compensation to help us invest this. It's also shown as a static cost in the fiscal note. Do we anticipate that number being the same, because we're using basis points, right? So in theory, that's going to grow and ebb and flow with the allocation of the fund, right?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I that would probably be a better question for the Permanent Fund Corporation. They're online.
Yeah, Mitchell. Yeah, if we can go to Devin Mitchell, if you would, Co-Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Mitchell, if you can put yourself on record.
Yes, for the record, Devin Mitchell, Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Through the Chair, Representative Stout, you've made a good point that probably was a deficiency in our note. I think in part it's due to the expectation that there would be relatively modest short-term fluctuations in value that would move beyond the estimates that were included in the fiscal note. But certainly there would need to be additional refinement, as you suggest, if fund balance does increase or decrease, that projected contractual cost would increase or decrease in a like manner.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and obviously I support this bill, but I always come back to your question because I'm looking at how PCE is set up. It's, you pay our PCE, then we go to community assistance, and I don't, you know, want to question anybody's foresight on that, but then that's first, and then you go down to renewable energy grants in second, and, you know, to me, the whole purpose of the PCE is to, you know, lower costs, but to also continue building anything that lowers cost, and I just... Personally, I think one and two are actually backwards. I mean, it seems like we would want to be doing everything we can to reinvest into, you know, cheaper energy for everywhere. We don't have to answer this now. I would love to see when community assistance became part of PC, how much has been paid out, to what communities has been paid out, versus what, you know, addressing the high cost of energy first. And if there's anything left over, that it could be community assistance. I don't know that, but somebody can email me. We don't have to discuss it here. That's always one of my questions that's kind of confusing to me, that we have a fund for cheaper energy. It seems like the renewable energy grant should be the first priority after we pay the PCE to continue to lower those costs.
Through the Chair, Representative Kronka, I was sitting here in this chair when we did started the waterfall, so I'm very familiar with that. Community, as the fund reached close to $1 billion, where it's at sitting at currently, there was, you know, people were looking at the fund and it had some pretty good earnings in some of those years. And we were looking at something that had a lot of buy-in to that the fund could be used for. And community assistance has everybody's buy-in. Every community bought into that. And so that's how community assistance became first on the list. And it was one program that I also sat in front of this committee when we first did community assistance. That program shrank from $180 million a year to $60 million to where it's at now. And it was a way to, because it was always having to be back funded and then it was short funded, it was a way that said that if earnings were great in the PCE endowment, that some of those excess earnings could be shared out because community assistance was getting short funded pretty consistently there for a while.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I'm wondering if I could ask Mr. Mitchell my question about, Mr. Mitchell, thank you, Chair Foster. Mr. Mitchell, my question, I don't know if you heard it, I asked it of Mr. Grusendorf earlier, but when the asset out, I support the bill, assuming it passes, when the PCE endowment portfolio comes over to you in a much more conservative asset allocation than the Permanent Fund Corporation, what's the expected timeline for that to be rebalanced and reallocated to match the Permanent Fund endowments allocations?
Thank you. For the record, again, Devin Mitchell, Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, and we anticipate that it's likely that rather than trying to transfer securities, that we would just have the Department of Revenue Treasury Division liquidate the assets that are currently held and transfer that amount to the corporation. The corporation has annual cash flow needs, and so if the bill were to be approved, we would incorporate that influx of cash to are projections for purposes of determining how the money would actually be reinvested in the portfolio. And so it might be, since money's fungible, it wouldn't necessarily be these dollars that wind up in a real estate investment like you referred to earlier, or a private, other private market investment that are more illiquid, or public market investment for that matter, but rather money that we could use to fulfill our obligations under the percent of market value transfer to the state of Alaska.
Okay, one follow-up. So how do we make sure and secure the current value of PCE coming in to make sure that it's coming in at its full and true value and not just at a fire sale that it is all sold, liquidated at revenue? Do you have any concerns about that?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I don't. It's all held in public securities at this point, and so it's in very liquid asset classes that that don't lend themselves to a fire sale methodology, other than if somebody believed there was a market timing aspect. But again, it is going to be, from a cash flow perspective, in aggregate for the state of Alaska, if we wind up getting cash that allows us to retain investments at the corporation in similar asset classes across our portfolio, then it's a there's an offsetting effect to any liquidation that might occur. So the quick answer is no, and then the longer answer, of course, followed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Thank you, Mr. Foster.
Representative. Thank you. Thank you. Let's see. I don't see any further questions. I'm going to take a brief at ease here. One second. Brief it is. Okay, House Finance back on record at 11:05 a.m. And it sounds like there's pretty good support for this bill. I'm inclined to entertain a motion to move it, but we should walk through the fiscal notes, and we do have the Permanent Fund Corporation online, as well as AEA, And then Mr. Grusendorf, I think they look like they're fairly simple fiscal notes. Maybe I'll give you first crack at them, unless you'd like me to go to the permanent fund. Okay, let's do that. So Mr. Mitchell or Ms. Pauline Swanson, we do have two fiscal notes. Both our Department of Revenue, the appropriation is Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. One is OMB Component 109. The other is OMB Component 2310. I see OMB Component 109 has a $60,000 fiscal note for services, and that is the fund source is Permanent Fund Gross Other, fund source code 1105, and that $60,000 would be to for auditing purposes. Is there anything that you might want to add to that, Mr. Mitchell or Ms. Swanson?
Again, for the record, Devin Mitchell, Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund. There isn't. I think it's pretty straightforward that it really is just a matter of having the additional audit need and providing funding for that.
Great. Thank you. Do we have any questions on this fiscal note? Seeing none, OMB component number 2310 has a services cost of $2.5 million. And the fund source is also permanent fund gross other. And that looks like that would just be for the management fees to manage that. That would be 25 basis points for, I assume, a professional manager to manage those funds. And is there anything you'd like to add to that, Mr. Mitchell or Ms. Swanson?
Mr. Chair, I would just say it's a combination of things, and so it would be external managers as well as internal managers that add up to that 25 basis points, and it's an estimate, and so it a not to exceed estimate, and so if we're able to accomplish the investment of the money for something less than that number would be below the 2.5, and as Representative Stapp pointed out earlier, if there's exceptional performance in the markets and we see significant increases in the fund size, there would be increased need for revenue to pay for that future investment, but that would be a good thing because you have more money and more disbursements.
Great. Thank you very much. And that was, thank you for that distinction, and that would be both external and internal managers. Do we have questions on this fiscal note? Seeing none, we'll move over to the Department of Revenue's fiscal note, and that is appropriation is taxation and treasury. Also, I'd like to note we also have with us Representative Co-Chair Johnson, and that is OMB component 121, and the fund source, you've got $1,178,900 from the general fund to the, or did I read that right? Or is that $1,178,900,000? And just transferring that into the PCE endowments. Maybe Mr. Mitchell, do you have any comments on this one? I don't know if I've read that right. I know there's the analysis on the back, and I should have just read that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I was called away for a second from the phone. Was it the Department of Revenue fiscal note that you were looking at, or our fiscal note?
Department of Revenue, it's the appropriation is taxation and treasury, OMB component 121. And maybe what I might do is I'll just read the analysis on the back. It says SB 98 transfers the responsibility to manage the investments of the PCE Endowment Fund from the Commissioner of Revenue to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund is currently budgeted to fund $1,179,000,000 towards Treasury's FY24 budget. The Treasury structure allows it to efficiently manage numerous funds at low cost. Transferring the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund to the APFC will not reduce Treasury's budget because Treasury allocates all of its costs, among the $48 billion in state and retirement investment funds it manages. As such, transferring management from the Treasury will result in increased funding from the general fund. So with that, Mr. Mitchell or anyone online, any comments before I take questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, this is Devin Mitchell. That would be the Department of Revenue or Treasury Division that would be able to provide comment on that fiscal note rather than us. We don't have direct involvement in its creation.
Thank you. And I realize that would be Pam Leary with Treasury, and unfortunately we don't have her online. But I think essentially this is just the transfer of the endowment money, so pretty straightforward. Mr. Grusiner?
Mr. Chairman, this fiscal note is what I was mentioning earlier, that revenue is, this is just for the management of the fund. It is not the transfer of the fund itself. So you were originally correct with the $1.1 million. Oh. And so basically they are not going to be getting $1.1 million out of the PC fund anymore, and they want to switch that to UGF, even though they are no longer managing the fund.
Great. Thank you. It's good. Good explanation. Do we have any questions on OMB component 121? Representative Ortiz, Representative Cronk, Representative Josephson, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who the question's for, but what I'm under the understanding that as you move forward from year to year to year, there will be a consistent ask of $1.1 million of UGF funds to do what? What is it going to do? What would this $1.1 million or $1.17 million it come from UGF, and what is its purpose?
Mr. Grusendorf, can you elaborate?
To the chair, Representative Ortiz, I'm not sure of the purpose. I just know they have personnel over there that were being paid for out of the PC fund endowment itself. And without that funding there, I think they share positions and it's allocated amongst different folks from revenue. And probably a better question for the Department of Revenue, but I don't know what they would be using that other than keeping the employees they have on in the Department of Revenue.
It seems a little strange, but that's commentary. Move it on to somebody else.
Okay. We certainly don't have to move this today. If folks want to get Department of Revenue online, we can come back to this. Actually, I do have another idea, and that is we could not adjourn this meeting today, but we could recess it to just before our regularly scheduled 1:30 meeting, and hopefully we could bring Department of Revenue on at that point. So with that, next question is Representative Ortiz and then staff, I believe.
Oh, what?
Representative Ortiz?
No. Josephson.
And oh, I'm sorry. Representative Josephson.
Mr. Chair, it would be redundant of what Rep. Ortiz asked. I have the same question.
Okay. Representative Sapp?
Co-Chair Foster, I'm going to echo the comments of Representative Ortiz and Justin. I do support moving the bill, but I think it would be prudent if we did actually address this issue with the folks at Revenue Tax Division.
We'll do that, and maybe to stay in line with the normal process, albeit expedited, we'll set an amendment deadline for 1 o'clock for today for this bill. Representative Johnson, just to bring you up to speed, this PCE bill, there seemed to be pretty strong support for it overall, so that's why we're moving quickly on this one. So with that, we will set this bill aside, and hopefully we'll have Ms. Pam Leary online at our regular scheduled 1:30 meeting. So we won't adjourn this meeting. We'll just recess it. So thank you very much, Mr. Grusendorf. Next up, we have House Bill 19 relating to the registration of commercial vessels. I'd like to ask Representative Stutes to please come to the table. Put yourself on the record. We also have with Representative Stutes Tracy Welch, Executive Director of United Fishermen, and is in the room, as well as Glenn Height, Commissioner of the CFEC. And let's see, is Glenn Height in the room? Okay, if you'd like to both come up. And maybe if you could also put yourselves on the record, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you all co-chairs and members of the House Finance Committee for taking this opportunity. For the record, I'm Representative Louise Stutes, and I represent District 5. Kodiak, Cordova, Seward, and many small rural communities that are on the coastline. Again, I appreciate the opportunity here today. And I'll tell you a little bit about House Bill 19. It would exempt active commercial fishing vessels from duplicative registration requirements, which were created by the passage of Senate Bill 92, the derelict boat bill, and that was passed in 2018. Senate Bill 92 aimed to provide state and local municipalities with a searchable database containing details of vessels and ownership. That database exists for commercial fishing vessels in the Commercial Fishing Entry Commission. The database is updated in real time, and operators are required to register yearly. The database is publicly accessible, and the information is provided under penalty of perjury. The information that is included is the legal owner of the vessel and a contact person, if not the same person as the applicant, permanent and mailing addresses, social security number, phone numbers, date of birth, and an email address. Members of the public can find the copies of the relevant forms on bases. House Bill 19 also institutes an annual $8 fee for documented CFEC registered vessels. Currently, vessels owners pay a $24 fee to the DMV, and House Bill 19 would waive that fee for the vessel owners who have paid the $24 to the DMV in the past 2 years. So this is not an additional fee for commercial fishermen. Currently, you are required to have, under the current statute, you are required to have both a CFEC sticker and a sticker which has been issued by the Department of Motor Vehicles. And that the intent of this legislation was not to create money. It was to create a database of owned vessels. So what this bill says is if you have a CFEC sticker, you will then not be required to go to the DMV and get a sticker from them. If you do not have a CFEC sticker, you then are required to have a DMV sticker. And we've been very fortunate because the Department of Public Safety for the last 4 years has been working with us and not issuing citations, or if a citation is issued for not having the dual stickers, they have expunged it. And with that, Mr. Kocher, I would be happy to walk through the sectional, if you wish.
Yes, if you could, Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Section 1 amends AS05.25.055I to exempt U.S. Coast Guard documented vessels with a valid license issued by the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission from the requirement to register with the Department of Motor Vehicles. Section 2 adds a new subsection, Section E, to AS16.05.475, that requires the CFEC to assess an $8 registration fee for U.S. Coast Guard documented vessels upon a renewal or issuance of a license beginning on January 1st, 2024. This fee is in lieu of the current three-year $24 registration or renewal fee collected by the DMV. It adds a new section, F, to AS16.05.475, specifying that fees collected in subsection E will be accounted for as provided in AS05.25.096B to be made available to the Department of Administration, the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and the Department of Natural Resources. Section 3 adds a new section to uncodified law that requires the CFEC to waive the $8 registration fee for years that USCG documented vessels have already paid through the three-year $24 registration fee with the DMV. Section 4 adds a new section to the uncodified law that makes Section 1 of this Act retroactive to January 1st, 2023. And Section 5 establishes an immediate effective date for the remainder of the bill. And with that, Mr. Co-Chair, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. We do have 10 minutes before we have another meeting with the Senate, and so maybe what we'll do is we'll take a few questions. I think Pam Leary may be online. We'll check with her to see if she can explain the fiscal note on the prior bill, and then we'll adjourn out. So with that, we've got questions. Representative Edgman?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I support this bill. And just to give it a quick bit of context, the issue of derelict vessels has been a longstanding issue in the state of Alaska. I don't want to date myself, but as a staffer many years ago, I worked on, I think, the original derelict vessels bill. But in the passage of then Senate Bill 92, I think it was, by Senator Peter Michicki, which was at least two or three sessions in the making, maybe three or four sessions. It took a long time to get this big bill through. This oversight occurred where you have this duplicative registration that occurs. And I think this bill is common sense because when you look at it, it not only assists the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, the Division of Motor Vehicles, the Department of Public Safety for having to to go through all the rigmarole in small communities like Dillingham and Naknek and the Bristol Bay Fisheries, where there's a tiny little DMV office and it just gets inundated with hordes of fishermen during the summer times scrambling to get their DMV, license and so forth, which there's been a, it's been waived in the last couple of years. But it also makes a lot of sense for fishermen, too, because they don't have to go through this rigmarole of meeting something that really probably got caught up in a big bill. It's a small oversight. It's taken us a couple of years to kind of get to the point where Representative Stutes can bring this bill forward. I hope it gets consideration from the committee. We pass it and really just put it under the banner of common sense legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Representative Johnson?
Well, I remember hearing the bill and I last year, and the question was on Coast Guard licensed vessels that are not licensed by the Commercial Entry Commission. So I believe we brought an amendment forward last year to add that. I don't have that amendment right now, although I'll find out when the amendment deadline is. I was just wondering I'm sure it's came up before, if you would have any thoughts on allowing for other types of boats that are licensed under the Coast Guard licensing, but not commercial fishing boats.
Representative Johnson, this is Representative Stutes for the record. I'm not sure what your question is. The vessels, and I will defer to Glenn Height, who is with the CFEC, but vessels that are registered with the Coast Guard have a federal registration, and what this bill is intending to do is have a state registration for vessels. I'm not quite sure what your question was. Any idea?
Thank you.
You could please
Mr. Chair, yes.
On the record.
Glenn Height, Commissioner with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, through the Chair, Representative Johnson. I think you're asking, would all documented vessels just register with CFEC? And I'm not sure that's terribly practical. When we license vessels for commercial fisheries, we'll issue an actual metal plate, not unlike what's on your car, but it's triangular. And then every year they renew, we give them a decal that shows that it's been renewed. So for vessels that are maybe doing tourism or freight haulers or cargo, to have a commercial fishing license plate would not help our fisheries managers or our troopers. So right. I would think those document vessels that are not commercial fishing would continue to sign up the DMV. That would allow for another state-based database with that information, if that answers your question. Thank you.
And I might add to that, the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission database and the DMV database, there is efforts. I don't know if it's currently, if they're one, but there were efforts to make them one database.
I'll bring that back at a future meeting.
We have further questions for Representative Stutes. I don't see any questions. Representative Stutes, we just wanted to do the introduction today, let folks think about it a little bit. Sounds like overall it's a good bill. Do you have any closing comments?
I have had no opposition to this. I have Ms. Tracy Welch here from the United Fishermen of Alaska, who they're in full support of it. And I've had no pushback from any agency.
Great. Okay, thank you. Any comments, Ms. Welch?
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Tracy Welch, and I'm the executive director for United Fishermen of Alaska. We represent 37 different fishing organizations throughout the state, participating in state fisheries, as well as organizations or fishermen participating in federal fisheries off Alaska's coast. And we stand in full support of House Bill 19 and view it kind of as a cleanup action. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So we'll come back to it. We can take it up under bills previously heard. So hopefully we'll squeeze it in there before the end of session here. So with that, I'd like to go back to thank you very much, Ms. Representative Stutes. We'll go back to Ms. Pam Leary. Are you online?
Chair Foster, I am on the line. Thank you.
Thank you. And with regard to SB 98, can you speak to the fiscal note?
I can, yes, thank you, sir. The fiscal note that the Department of Revenue Treasury Division has submitted is for roughly a change of $1.2 million from the PCE Endowment Fund as designated funds to the UGF. And the reason for that is the way the Treasury efficiently manages many funds at a very low cost. And by transferring one fund to be managed outside of the Treasury Division will mean that we have to reallocate our costs. And because we have limited fund resources, we would be using UGF to fund the remainder of the Treasury Division. I would add that because we have one less fund to manage, it would not change our staffing requirements because how we manage our funds are quite efficient.
We have questions of the committee. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Ms. Leary, could you provide a little bit more detail in terms of what you mean by cost reallocation, needing the $1.2 million annually for what particular purpose? Why do you need this particular money?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, our budget has a specific amount of money, and it funds all of the staffing of the Treasury and all of the work we do and our vendors. And if we manage one less fund, we still have all of the same costs that need to be reallocated from the fund sources that we do have. And then the Power Cost Equalization Fund is one of our larger funds, and it currently is charged essentially 10 basis points of the assets that are under management. And if we lose that funding source from our budget, we will have to replace it with UGF.
Representative Ortiz?
And in order to do that, in other words, you have to have it so that you don't need to reduce staff. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, we still need the staff within the Treasury to manage all of the other funds that we manage. And so those costs would not be reduced simply by having a fund move from our management.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got questions, Representative Stapp and then Galvin.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, so I'm not entirely tracking you. So currently you're taking 10 basis points off the investment funds that you manage currently to be able to pay your staff in advance and said investment fund. So you're going to lose not the majority of the investment fund, but you're going to lose about $1 billion of assets under management. So my question to you would be, rather than come ask the legislature for GF, is there an issue with taking 11 basis points off the funds in order to justify your costs in the event that you still need them, as opposed to asking the legislature here at the Finance Committee for $1.2 million a year in perpetuity?
Through the chair, the cost allocation plan that was developed for the Treasury is based under assets under management, so all of the funds that we manage, and it is a typical way to charge for investments. You will find that in the private investment world. You'll get charged a certain amount of basis points to have your funds managed. And so our cost allocation plan has a couple of components. One, we allocate based on assets under management to all of our funds. Certain funds that are more endowment-like are charged a minimum of 10 basis points. And this is, the PCE is one of five funds that are charged that way. Many of the funding sources are already general fund. We do have funding sources from public school trust and from power cost equalization, to name a few, but others we do not have revenue sources other than UGF. So this amount of money would fall into the pool of assets. And yes, our funds would, because they would diminish in size, there would be a relative increase to what we charge to other funds, but it would be primarily to the UGF that would carry the bulk of the funding for management fees.
Ms. Leary, are you available at 1:30 just to come back to us? We're late for a meeting right now with the Senate.
Chair Foster, I may or may not be. I'm waiting for a call from another hearing that got pushed possibly to this afternoon, but if it is not pushed, I'm sure we can work something out where I can come back at least maybe to both bodies simultaneously.
And we could have you either come back to us at the beginning of our 1:30 meeting, or you could come in at the end of the meeting towards the 3 o'clock or 3:30 time. So with that, we'll go ahead and set SB 98 aside. And again, we can take that up under bills previously heard if Ms. Leary is available at the 1:30 meeting. So with that, our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is 1:30 today, May 4th. We'll be hearing public testimony in both SB 25, which is repealing funds, accounts, and programs. That's by Senator Kaufman. And then also House Bill 125, which is trapping cabins on state land. So then we have our first hearing on House Bill 19, which is vehicles and boats transfer on death titles, I believe. Is that Representative Rauscher? Okay, it is. So with that, we will be adjourned at 11:34 a.m. Thank you.